Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for the talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. The follow directions, the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or look for SFU On Call or Starfleet Universe On Call. Also, we co-broadcast on twitch.tv, so if you want to participate there, because there is a chat room there, and I am more than happy to keep an eye on that chat room so I can reply to the many questions and corrections that I find on that chat room. And of course, to find me, just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, also that's sfuoncall. And of course, I have a personal account called Paul Franz. That's PaulFranz. If you want to follow me, that's great. Just a reminder that I love being Catholic, an O's fan, even though they're losing. And also, I love technology. So if you don't like any of those that I might tweet about, then I would say don't follow me. Also, there is my business account, which is Franz Games, that I use for sending out email, posts about things that if you're on SFB Online, you might care because the tournaments are sent up there, the updates to clients, also things that are happening at Starfleet Warlord also are sent and posted up there. And of course, this talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. A call to arms Starfleet Reinforcement 1 is now available on Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and War Game Vault. So go grab it. If you're a Call to Arms fan, I've not read the rules. I really need to read the rules. I bought the rules. I've not read them. But I need to do that soon. Moving onward to the Sapphire Star Terminal, we have the final setup. It is the finals of Brian Evans in the Hydran versus Justin Reuter, a.k.a. Metal Dog, in the Ramen Firehawk. And it should be interesting to see those guys play. I definitely like the matchup. Moving onward and forward to the FedCom library, I've had a chance to process some of the stuff from last week. I've not processed this week's, which is understandable given things. And we're all the way up to 467 squadron-sized ships in the FedCom library and up to 362 fleet-sized ships in the library. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have me, we have Barry, we have Dave, and Barry's on with us for just a bit of time, so I'll get him online ASAP. How you doing, Barry?
Tired.
Long day?
Actually, it was a long night.
Yes.
Yesterday, I woke up at 4 a.m. and then worked the whole day and then drove through the night and got home at 7:30 in the morning. So, yesterday was a long day.
Mm-hmm.
I slept a little bit for 2 hours today and looking forward to sleeping tonight.
Understood. Well,
lost another 4 pounds. this diet is amazing. Oh. I'm down to 190. Now I have a whole bunch of days off coming up, so maybe we can get together for a game of glass.
I'd love to.
And oh, maybe we can try out some of these second gen rules.
Yeah, that would be great. Obviously, the one thing to remember is that next week I'm gone on vacation.
Okay, so it would have to be Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah.
Does Saturday work for you?
Yeah, Saturday works for me. I'll be back by Friday.
No, like 2 days from now, right? When does your vacation start?
My vacation starts on Wednesday of next week, and it goes to Friday.
Okay, so 2 days from now, Saturday, can I come over and you can do Starfleet Battles in class?
You mean tomorrow? Oh, yeah, two days. Okay, today's Thursday. Duh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Awesome. I will be there.
Okay, yeah.
What time?
I was thinking about around between 12 or 1 would be good because I got things to do early in the morning.
Yeah, okay. 12 to 1 works. Yeah. I'll bring my own food, obviously.
Right. Oh, understood. And if you could update the X-ship rules, you know, that per the discussion that we had last night.
Yes.
That'd
be, I will update them probably tomorrow.
Good. I also have to warn my wife that you're going to be coming over. But I understand you're going to be providing your own food, and I think that'd be fine for my dear wife.
Yeah, because 90% of what most people eat, I can't.
Oh, understood. I know you're on a special diet. Understood. And that is fine.
Yeah.
It's just obviously it makes things a tiny bit easier when it comes to my wife and us, you know, making dinner and so forth, too, as a side benefit.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. But anywho, do you think you have enough time just to go over what we discussed yesterday for everyone else who's been following along on this process of the second generation rules that you've created.
Yeah, so what I'm thinking about is, and I wonder if we can at some point take the working copy and send it over to Steve. I don't know if there would be of any interest in them or not. But what we're discussing was an update to the power generation. Mm-hmm. And what I'm thinking there was some people had some criticism of the heat generations. Like, okay. So what I said was I'm going to group engine boxes in groups of 5 boxes. Approved, and the grouping size depends on the size of the ship. So for the cruiser, it would be 5 boxes for each group, maximum. So 15 box warp engine would now become 3 groups of 5 each.
Mm-hmm.
Each group has 2 additional boxes to it. And so during EA, the engine produces a normal power output. So, let's say a Federation tournament heavy cruiser has 38 power, out, which is 15 more, four impulse and four APR. So put all the APR in one group, all the impulse in one group. Mm-hmm. So each group has two extra boxes, which are not on the deck. You may or may not be able to deploy them with a hit run raid, although I don't know why you would do it. Just that. But in any case, during EA, the engines produce a normal amount of power. At any point, an engine can, a group can be, get power from it again during the turn. So let's say that I zapped him, left fork group five, I'm tapping that for power generation, I get my five power out of it, I have to use that power, that impulse. Mm-hmm. So one of the places to put it would be into the batteries where I have now 5 points reserved for. When I do that, I check off one of the extra boxes. So I can double that group twice.
Right.
Not only once per turn, but I can do it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I may throw something in there that says, checking a box, there's a late impulse delay between letting you do that. That might make sense. You can't double on impulse in group 32, get your power on EA, and then double it in that same group again on impulse 1. Yeah, probably not. So, but in any case, any group that is not back for extra power that turn, instead of marking off a box, it erases a box. So,
right.
And that erase of the box happens at the end of the turn. So if I go through a whole turn without tapping that group, I erase one of the extra boxes.
Okay, and it's one of the extra boxes in total for on the ship.
Two extra, so if you, so you have two extra boxes per group. So, let's say I double every single group on a ship over the course of the turn. Well, I've got 38 points of power from my Fed tournament cruiser. I've generated 76 points now. And the following turn, I can generate another 76 over the course of the turn. But the turn after that, I'm limited to 38.
Mm-hmm.
And I get one extra box back per group. So each group comes back. Special case when you're cloaked. I'm going to reduce the cloaking cost. So, for example, the Romulan War Eagle would have a base cloak cost of 5, which is a lot. I'm not sure what the base cloak cost is right now for Romulan War Eagle. I think it's higher than 5.
No? Oh, I'm sure it's higher than 5.
Yeah. But, and I might make it the same cloak cost for all three Romulans. But it's going to be something nominal. But the thing is that every group that I use for power during EA, I have to mark off an extra box. I can double an engine. But then I would use both boxes, one for the EA and one for the extra power. And I cannot dissipate power
mm-hmm.
while I'm cloaked. So that means that a cloaked ship might not want to even generate all its power during EA, just so it has those engine boxes for later on, for another turn. The other thing, now of course, the next generation rules I was using was cloak is completely hidden. And the ship that is under cloak that is not exposed, is A, it's completely hidden, and B, you cannot shoot at it. Although, if a mine goes off nearby, it could flash cube it and reveal its presence.
Right.
So yeah, because area cause, of effect weapons.
Right, because there's one thing that we were going to do, which was, well, had a defined role, which is basically the cloak ship goes, it's completely removed off the board.
Yeah. Right. But obviously, it's not going to set off a mine. Like that game Alien, shooting an alien in the dark, if you remember, if you ever played that one.
Did I play which one?
Aliens in the Dark, where you're on a ship with all the lights out.
No.
Some humans, some aliens. It's kind of like playing Battleship. I think that alien is in Grid A3 or something like that.
Yeah, I never played that.
I don't know. You never played that? What's his name? Jack? No. The guy who's always playing Twilight Imperium.
Yeah. Oh, me. Jeez. I know. I remember the guy. I can picture his face.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he wins every game he ever plays.
Yeah, that one.
That one, yes. Yeah, that's a game he brought. That's pretty good. Eric, that's me. Oh, well.
Yeah. Just a reminder of what the chat room is talking about, which is X2 was a real product. It got pulled, very poor product at that point. They promised in the actual release, you know, in the book itself, it said that they know this isn't perfect, but you know, you can play it, and we will be updating in the future. What we're talking about here...
Real soon. Yeah, they said real soon I will be giving an update.
Oh, agreed. I understood. But Barry created a set of second-generation X rules himself because AB has talked about it for years, and they yet to do it. But, you know, Barry's come up with some really neat ideas. And we're kind of rolling them around and discussing. Yeah, I started recording. Yeah.
Discussing possible ways to do it. The original X2 ships were unbalanced. Unplayable.
Oh, agreed. The original X2 ships were unplayable. In theory, you could play them against each other and they'd be okay. They weren't great.
No, I tried that. Some of them were far... They had a cruiser and a destroyer and a frigate for each race. Actually, a command cruiser, a heavy cruiser, a command cruiser, a destroyer, and a frigate for every race. But the command cruisers are basically cruiser with the probes replaced with special sensors. That would be the only difference. But cruisers were, I tried some scenarios with cruisers, and they just weren't balanced against each other.
Right.
The Klingon or Gazini was probably the most dangerous of the lot. I mean, I don't think there was a single other ship out there that could even touch it. And the feds were just, yeah, it was a very, very powerful ship, but against anybody else, it was like,
right.
not going to.
Right,
yeah, it wasn't going to do too well.
Right, and Chris was just mentioning that the overloadable phasers had a chance of misfiring. If you rolled a misfire and got it, you couldn't fire till next turn and lost the energy. And then you had to roll again. So maybe you misfired again, made a game of die rolling contest more akin to gambling, which...
Well, actually, there was no misfiring in second generation ships.
Right. That's true.
In supplement two, yeah. They said first generation ships could misfire, but not seconds. But they revisited the first generation
right.
ships. And
right.
I think,
they did do that, yeah.
Yeah, but the second gen they just didn't Vinny had six of those monster drone racks. Oh my god. That were just, first of all, the drones took 8 points of damage to kill, did 24 points if it hits, and the drone racks could fire twice per turn, and they held 8 spaces. And the Kazini had 6 of these racks.
Right. Right.
Oh, did I mention they were built-in ATG and everything possible?
Right, understood. But if I recall correctly, when the second generation, when it comes to the Captain's Edition, because Chris was mentioning that, yeah, you were right, that it was the supplemental, supplement number two was the one that had misfires, and the Captain's Edition of the rules had no overload phasers and no misfires. Of X rules, okay. Of X rules, sorry. Forgive me.
Right, but keep in mind that the second generation was Commander's Edition. It came out in '83, and I don't think they adjusted. They when they did Captain's Edition, they never even that supplement was already like, thou shalt not even mention it ever existed.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, I better not park where I'm parking. Crap.
Okay. Well, sounds like you gotta go.
No, I have to.
Sounds like you gotta go.
No. I'm good. I just parked my car and then I realized that I the spot where I was normally parked, there was no parking space. I'll
okay.
just park across the street, and okay. I realize that once a month, okay. across the street is where they have tickets.
Okay. Seems like Barry is busy at the moment discussing with a person about parking. So we'll let him go at that, because I think he's actually at his current destination. Barry, it's been nice having you on, and you have a good night. With that, I think we will transition on to the original topic for this evening, which are basically is the Starmada, like the combat of Starmada. Talk about how you fire your weapons and things like that and do damage to ships and so forth. Yeah. Be honest, Dave, when it comes to second generation or even X ships, removing the phaser overloads, I think that was a mistake. I like the phaser overloads. Though obviously they might return for second generation. But moving on. Okay, give me this quick thing here. That's it. Okay. So, bring up my screen. And, well, to go, when it comes to, just go through the weapons, what these terms mean, and how they affect how things are done. Now, obviously, this type of is what weapons called. Duh. But okay, right here, as weapon definition says, first number is short range, then medium range, and then long range. So, now, one thing you got to remember, and that is that in Star Armada, two enemy ships cannot be in the same hex together. That's not allowed. That's according to the rules. Well, duh. So the short range for Phaser 1 is 3, medium range is 6, and long range is 9. Now, these other numbers over here, 1 times, or 1x, sorry, 1x, it's actually kind of times 3 plus, which is rate of fire, so how quickly this weapon supposedly fires. Yeah, the ranges are in hexes, just to let you know. Okay, rate of fire, the next number is what's called accuracy. And what that means is that you roll your die, roll this many die for each weapon, the rate of what's called your rate of fire. And in this case, it has a 2/3 chance of hitting with no modifiers. That means medium range. If it's medium range, which is range 4 through 6, it's a medium range. 1 to 3 is short range, but 4 to 6 is medium, and then 7 to 9 is long range. So at medium range, there is no modifiers, and for that, there's no modifiers to the accuracy. Now, with medium range, it's 3 plus, so that means 3, 4, 5, 6 on the die roll, i.e., there's got 2/3 chance of hitting with a phaser at medium range. And for each hit, you have 1 impact. Now, because this is SFB, you don't have to roll impact. Anything that hits impacts. It's automatic. And then after that, then 1 damage, meaning, it does 1 point of damage. Therefore, you get to roll for damage once. And the damage chart, excuse me, that's one thing I did not bring up, and I apologize. I should have prepped for that. So, bum, bum, bum. And come on, it's a little higher. No, it's not. It's the screens. See, the screens are different from shields in Star Armada. Star Armada shields are leaky, which means when you do an impact, you actually have an impact roll, which goes against a shield. And if you roll, I forget the roll number is at the moment, because it didn't impact Klingon Armada, so I didn't really look at it. So you roll a die, and then if you roll it for impact and you actually hit, it gets past the shield. So and it should be up here, just a little farther up, which is, here it is. Okay, these are the damage rolls. 1-3 is hull, 4 is engine hit, 5 is weapons hit, and 6 is shield hit. Now, in the Klingon Armada, which is a modified rules for Starmada, rolls of 6, if you roll damage and you roll a die and you roll a 6, you miss. It doesn't actually damage the ship in any way. Remember one thing, that since we are using screens instead of shields, and we're using directional shields at that, and given that, you have to go through the shield first before you actually get to the GUI center, the big surprise, the internals, which is basically what you would expect given it's kind of a simulation of SFB, or at least it comes close to simulating the feeling of play with SFB. It's not, because obviously it's not SFB rules, but it's got has the feeling for it overall. And part of that is that you have directional shields. Part of that is that shields protect the ship until you get the shield is down. Until the shield is down, then it can't get to the GUI center. Unlike, which actually, if you think about it, it's a little bit different than FedCom, because FedCom actually lets you, they have basically leaky shields, if I recall correctly. I'm sure if I got that wrong, Chris will correct me. So when you do damage, you get and you get internals, because until you get past the shield, front, rear, starboard, port. Shields, until you get past them, you don't damage the ship itself. You just damage the shields. So, one minor thing, folks, because I needed to look at. There it is. Okay. I was looking for the short range versus long range. Yeah, that exactly. That's what I thought. Chris has pointed out. Yeah, it was one point links for every volley over 10 points in FedCom. Yep. That's called leaky shields. In SFB, it'd be called leaky shields. I just wanted to double check on this because I thought I had it right, but I wanted to make sure. Which is the to hit roll. If you come within closer, so i.e. if you're in short range, then you get a +1 bonus is applied to the result of each die roll. So, if you roll in the case of your short range, now you have a 5-6 chance of hitting, of the hit roll being successful. Now, long range does exactly the opposite. It will then reduce the chance of getting a hit. So unlike SFB, where Phaser 1s act as a ranged weapon, not a to-hit weapon, but a ranged weapon, i.e., depending upon the range, it does certain damage. And, everything, I don't think they have such a thing as ranged weapons in Starmada, but definitely not in Klingon Armada. Because for SFB, course, if you're listening to this, which is as I said, depending upon the range, it has different damage versus to hit, which means either it hits and does a certain amount of damage or doesn't hit and does no damage. That's just a pure to hit, which is disruptors, photons, hellbores. What's another one? Anything else I can think of off the top of my head? Obviously, plasma bolts are another one, which will do exactly the same thing. So in the case of these phaser ones, if you, given this a 3+, if you fire at long range, then you've got a 50% chance of actually hitting. So the idea is that you average over the damage over the number of weapons that you have. Okay. Now, one thing that Chris did correct, well, I'm not sure if he corrected me on or clarified it for me, because I'm not sure I don't think I explicitly said it, but I did mention these little numbers here. So when you actually damage a ship, you roll the dice, and then if you get a weapon hit, so in this case, in this Klingon, if it gets a weapon hit and that gets filled, so now you go from 19 to 16, so there's three weapons that you have to mark. Now, when it comes to phasers, you only can do a maximum of two. Phaser twos, you can do a maximum of three in a single volley. Maximum of three damage before you have to fill up all these kinds. So in the case of three, so in theory, I can, for weapons, what I could do is I can take a tractor beam and give me one drone, so I max out the number of drone racks I can hit, and I'll take a phaser two, and that's three. That'll be 3 points of damage done to the ship. And unlike SFB, there is no directional damage, so you can actually have it so that you get hit on the left on the like. I'm going here. This is the right side of the ship. And then the weapons that are damaged on the left side of the ship. You can do that in Starmada. So. Boom, boom, boom. Now. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, the way drone racks work is, drone racks, any seeking weapons. Drone racks or plasma, same thing, which is they have an MA rating. And the MA rating is basically a movement allocation rating. So that's the number of movements that seeking weapon can go or have. Well, it must go unless it hits the target. Sorry, there was one rule about movement when it comes to seeking weapon movement that I read and I forgot when it comes to MA. There's okay. The cost of each forward is one. If the target is A or B arc. Each hex cost, right. So if the target in flight C or D arc, each hex cost two movement. And if a target is in the flight EF, each hex costs three. If the target lies on the arc boundary, apply the lower MA. The seeking weapon must move forward unless moving forward would not decrease the range. This is SFB talk here, because we all know that rule. Okay, and the seeking flight only may attack the declared target. Boom, boom. And the seeking weapon basically attacks just like any other weapon, i.e., with no modifiers, because there's no range. That is, you got right here, which is rate of fire. You've got a 2+ when it comes to the accuracy. So you've got, and the SFB, this is a strange concept, really. And that is that it can, it's got a 5/6 chance. So if you roll a 1, it fails. So you can have a, still just boggles the mind for a person to play the SFB, which is a drone can hit, but it can't, but it might not hit. Hello? That makes no sense to me. But then, okay, you got 1 impact, big surprise, it automatically hits, and then 3 damage. So it can really hurt you for 3 damage. So you have, which makes sense. Give me a sec here. Because unfortunately, the weapon chart that's included, I don't think really, well, no, I think it does include the ones, which is the plasma torpedo. I'm just looking up a plasma torpedo here. The S torpedo has a movement allocation, an MA of 8. Its rate of fire is 3. Times, you know, with a action of 2, same thing. And again, it's 3, it has 3 damage. It takes 2 power points to fire. Now, yeah. And then you can bolt it and it acts like plasma can be bolted. Duh. All these are slow. Big surprise. It takes 3 turns to recharge. And for a bolt, it's 5, 10, 15 is the range, which is, if you think about it, it's kind of weird. The reason I say that's weird is because of under SFB, phasers can go a longer distance. But of course, I think the reason why they did the way they did it is just because you can actually do a lot of damage at range 9, and having a long range to being, let's say, range 20, that's, which is closer to the range in SFB, then at the off, that's, you know, it would be, make things really, make the phasers actually really powerful at those longer ranges. Because the thing is, it's not like Star Armada has a long range and an extra long range, you know, a distant range or whatever you want to call it, where you can add additional modifier to make it, you know, even harder for it to hit. Because I think in theory you could. Yeah. As Chris mentioned, and I think I pointed out last week, which is everything in Stormlight is much closer together. That's because in a turn, as I pointed out last week, in SFB, you can move up to like 30 hexes. In Starmada, you might be moving 6 hexes. You might move 8 hexes, but most probably you're going to be moving like 6 hexes. At max speed is 6. Which to me is, you know, so all those ranges should be compressed. And the reason why I even pointed out for the plasma bolt doesn't look at like that the range is compressed at all. And the bolt is very powerful in my mind. It's really powerful. Yeah, it does half the damage of the actual torpedo itself because it's, in the case of a plasma F, it's one rate of fire Rate of Fire 1 versus Rate of Fire 2, and Plasma S, Rate of Fire 1 versus Rate of Fire 3. Obviously, splitting 3 by half is going to give you 1.5, so you don't want to give them 2 versus a 1, you know, because you can't have partial values for that. Now, of course, as pointed out last week, there are some actions that require what are called power points. And if you want to fire a single overload disruptor, it costs 2 power points. So for each disruptor that you fire, it costs you 2 power points. At least, I'm sure Chris will correct me if I'm really wrong on that one. And same thing for the plasmas. The plasmas also require 2 power points per plasma to launch. Now, one thing I already described to you what power points are and how you calculate them, which was relatively simple, which is their engine rating minus the engine requirement, multiply that by the energy power ratio, the EPR, you know, this figure right here, and then you got your power points. Now, the one thing that I forgot to mention in this, which is the whole idea, let me get the Starfleet Universe section of this, and that is that you can actually, where is it? What you can do is you can decide. I wanted to look it up, but just to find out how much it was. I'm pretty sure it's there. It is. Okay, offline. You can take your phasers offline, and by taking your phasers offline, you will get it starts to receive 1 additional power point for each operational phaser 1 or 2 that is taken offline. As it's mentioned here, in order to gain additional power, a starship may take its phaser weapons offline. The attention to record it is order phase by writing NP for no phasers at the beginning of ship, and this has no effect on speed or engine requirement. Taking the phaser offline has 2 effects. 1, you know, as I mentioned there, and no phaser 1s or phaser 2s may be fired at the upcoming combat. So in the case of this Klingon ship, you've got 1, 2, we got 3, and then we have additional 6 here. It says 9. So if you took your phasers offline in this Klingon vessel, you have 9 additional power points. Yeah, and Chris just mentioned that plasma is deadly in Star Armada. It has an MAM, movement allowance, of 8. Phasers can fire at a maximum of 9 hexes, so you're generally at range 8 or less. That means plasma hits before the first movement phase at full strength, or can anyway. Definitely at the very least, the plasma bolts can hit. You can actually bolt at like range 15. Let me just look at the only way to find the bolt target is actually looking at this. I don't have one up here right there. And that is that it's a four plus. So the accuracy is 4 plus. So basically it's a 50% chance. Big surprise. And that's at medium range. Medium range is out to range 10. So at range 10, you got a 50% shot of actually hitting with 2 points of damage. 1 rate of fire, but it's 2 points of damage. Yep. 2 points. Okay. From over there, I freaked myself out. That's for a G. 1 point of damage for an F. And I assume it's 3 for an S. But So that's a lot of damage at range 10, the 50% chance, versus your disruptors. Disruptors, you know, you can, yes, you can overload them out to range 10, which is nice. And they actually have pretty good hits, too. Actually, no, they don't. That's 4, 5, 6. It's the 50% shot, which is... See, this is one of those nice things about Starmada. As a Klingon, UIM doesn't exist, which I'm so happy about. Oh, yeah, yeah. Agreed. Chris is mentioning that a long-range bolt, i.e. range 15, has basically a 1/3 chance of hitting. You have to roll a 5 or 6. Geez. That reminds me. There was a one kind of quirky rule that I read. Let me see if I can find it. Because it was one of those quirky rolls that if you roll like a 6. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, now I remember. There's a quirky rule for to hit. And that is that if you roll... Okay, let's say that you through modifiers somehow... I have to look at all the modifiers. But through modifiers, you've got it so that it's an automatic hit. It hits. You still got to roll. Because even if you have... if you cannot miss, you have to roll. And if you roll 1, you miss. And then, and also the opposite's true too. That is that even if you have no way of hitting, you can still roll. And if you roll a 6, I think, if I recall correctly, I think you still hit. Let me look at the hits. Right, here it is. Minimum maximum rolls. Modifiers may result in a situation where to hit roll cannot fail. E.g. a +2 modifier with an accuracy of 3+. In such a case, any die roll that comes up with a 1 is a miss. Likewise, modifiers that can situation which to hit roll cannot succeed, e.g. a modifier of -2 for a weapon on accuracy of 5+. In such cases, you reroll any die roll that comes up with a 6, add 5, along with any other modifiers. So, before modifiers, yeah. Okay. So, there's, you still got a chance. Even if it's not hittable, it still has a chance. You mean we have a chance? Tiny. Yeah, Zinnia's same thing as more drone racks. Now, as Chris pointed out, with a MA of 8, yeah, your plans are going to go pretty fast. Now, as I mentioned last week, I thought one of those cool things about the flights of... Now, this is my understanding, and Chris, please correct me if I'm wrong. According to the rules for Klingon Armada, that is that after a turn on the board, it basically removes one flight to... And my understanding of that is that you subtract one, you get rid of one of the rate of fire. Because it starts with, you know, 2x. Here it is. Evaporating weapons, let's say, are seeking weapons that start very powerful but lose strength the longer they remain active. Each time an evaporating seeker flight ends its activation without impacting its target, remove one seeker from the flight. Do not combine the rate of fire of multiple evaporating seeker mounts when fired at the same target. Each mount generates a separate flight of identical size. Yep. And Chris verify what my understanding is correct. And that is that when you have a plasma, like a plasma R or plasma G, which is 3x, which is a rate of fire of 3, that means it can stay on the board for 3 turns before it's completely gone. Now, when it comes to damage to plasmas, when you fire at it, it doesn't destroy the weapon. It's kind of interesting how it works. And that is, it says plasma torpedoes may only attack by phasers, which another SAB roll, hit scored on the plasma do not reduce the size of the flight. Instead, you place a die, I keep track of it somehow, next to the torpedo, indicating the number of its hits scored. When the torpedo impacts its target, reduce the number of damaged dice rolled by the number showed on this die. And they give the example of Plasma R with 2 seekers remain, because it's been on the board for as long as it has. 2 to hit or die rolls are come up with a 3 and a 6, indicating that 2 hits. Normally, this would mean 8 points of damage are inflicted. However, the torpedo suffered 3 hits on route. Therefore, only 5 damage are inflicted. So, which is, again, it's an interesting way of doing it. And I'm pretty sure that's only, I know it's only in the Starfleet universe way of doing things. And I think that that's a good imitation of what Starfleet Battles does, with reducing the head strength by the amount of phasers that you hit it with. And I think the beauty is just, as I mentioned last week, I found that rule, the way that plasma torpedoes work in Starmada, are just beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous in its simplicity. You don't have to track range. You just have to track how long it's been on the board and how much damage to it, which in previously you had to keep track of the damage anyway. But you also had to keep track of how far it had gone. And then, of course, you had the range brackets and all that fun stuff. You don't have to worry about range brackets with Starmada. It quote unquote attacks, and then just like the drone rack, a drone hits, which is explosion, and it attacks, and depending upon how many seekers are left in that flight, then it will have that. That's how many, that's what the rate of firing is at that point. So my number of die rolls you do to see if you hit, which again, it's one of those goofy quirks. If you reflect on it, when it comes compared to Starfleet Battles, where Starfleet Battles, if it hits, it hits. It does all the damage. In the case of plasmas, obviously that can be reduced, and drones, it can actually be whatever it is. In the case of a Type 1 drone, is 12 points of damage. Well, in Starmada, it might be, it's not going to be 12 points of damage, it's going to be 3 points of damage, which is fine because of, I think this has quite a few less boxes than has an SFB. But, but there is a chance that it will miss. It's just, it's crazy. Now, to be honest, and that's a B. There actually is a if you're using full EW rules in SFB, yes, a seeking weapon can miss. It is possible, depending upon how much of a shift that you have. Now, that's a B. Getting that shift, that's a tough nut to crack. That it will miss. You got, because you can get it so that it can do, I'm talking about a complete miss. Most of them are like trimmed down. You know, I'd have to look at the EW rules because it's been a while since I looked at them. But as I mentioned, SIP, it takes a lot to get it so it completely misses. So, I think that covers combat overall, how it works. I didn't show you, a living example, with die rolls and all, but I didn't think you really needed that. But let's go through a quick example. And that is, give me this. I wanted my die roll. Okay. Give me my dice. See? Got dice. Now, let's say we have a range. Let's say a disruptor. Range. Let's say range 15, just for giggles. Let's make it interesting. Range 15, okay, that's going to be a minus 1. So that means we have to roll a 5 or 6 to hit the nasty Xinti, which is at range 15. So that's... Oops. Okay, it rolls a 4. It missed. Now let's pretend that actually hit. If it hit, then it would go, if it hit, then okay, it automatically impact, and then of course the damage is 1 at that point. It's 1. And if it has shields, obviously it's going to go and hit the shield and reduce the amount of shield that is left. Now, I'm just going to do this. Okay. So, let's say that they had, no shields. There had been, the shield, it's running away. There was no shields left on the facing the Klingon, and it hits, but he rolls, and what does he roll? He rolls a 6. Sorry, even though you hit, you missed. So, that's a really quick and dirty example of that. Now, there's one thing I remember mentioning last week, and that is cloak. I forget if I went through a whole thing with cloak. I know I mentioned it. I referred to it, but I wasn't sure if I actually went through it about the cloaking device. And how it's different from in normal Starmada and SFB, Starfleet Universe Starmada, i.e. Klingon Armada. Actually, I'm using reference right now as the Romulan Armada, which is basically the same rulebook. Now, the one thing that in regular Starmada, what you do is actually quite simple. When you mark it as a C to say, I'm cloaking the ship. Poof. It disappears. It disappears from the board completely. But as part of every turn, the person has to record their movement. And as I mentioned last week, when it comes to that part of the orders, yes, you actually have to Yeah. I'm going to show this, which is what Chris is mentioning in the chat room, which is 1-3 hull, 4 engine hit, 5 weapon hit, and 6 basically miss, as I mentioned earlier. But with Starfleet Universe, sorry, we can't have an actual disappearing cloak, which actually, I would actually love to play Starmada with a disappearing, cloak. Now, the one thing that, as I mentioned last week, and that is movement, even though, okay, you're supposed to, you trade it on and off, that person, if you go in the sequence, I think it's called sequential movement, where you move one, I move one, and if you have like twice the number of ships, then you move two and I move one, that kind of thing. But even if that happens, the idea is that you write down your orders so that those orders can be, one, verified by your opponent to say, okay, yes, these are valid. And then, so that before you move, you can verify it. And two, you can't, yes, I think most people could kind of do the calculations pretty quickly, after they've played Star Model for a while. So they wouldn't need to write it down, but the rules say you do write it down. I don't want to get into that discussion because I'm thinking about the whole idea of call for fire versus pure impulse activity and that whole discussion, which part of the discussion in my mind was always that pure impulse, in theory, you're supposed to go through each segment and say, okay, got anything, and that's the way the rules were written. And people as a quick courtesy to say, okay, let's just jump to call for fire, see if anyone has fire. No one has fire, continue on. In fact, if you actually play in real life, sometimes you don't even ask the question why, because that if you're both at range 35, no one's gonna be firing anything. Well, you might launch something, yes. In that case, you say, oh, hold on, I got something to do. But even that, in theory, it is purely a convention that we use because we're in real life. We don't have the tools to keep it secret. So, okay, I'm going to stop that minor rant at this moment in time. Now, I'm just going to read this real quick, which is about the cloaking device. The cloaking devices in the Starfleet Universe operate differently than standard Star Model game. That is correct. A starship that activates its cloak is not removed from the board. Instead, it's automatically considered to be detected, and an active cloaking device adds +1s to the ship engine requirement. When a ship activates a cloaking device, any plasma the normal stuff when it comes to, any plasma torpedoes launched by that ship, they're basically HEG. They have their own control. They're fine there. Though it mentions that, however, other seeking weapons, drones and suicide shuttles are removed. That's SFB. When attacking a cloak ship, apply a -2 to hit penalty. This is in place of the standard -1 penalty for attacking a cloaked target. That's part of the standard Star Model rules. A starship currently undercloaked may not be tractor linked. A ship may not activate the cloaking device if it's already linked with another ship. So, actually, if I recall correctly, in SFB, you actually can cloak while you're tractored. It just means that the tractor isn't nearly as effective because they know where you are. So, but you still, if I recall correctly, you still get the range penalty. You know, the plus, I think the plus five. You know, so they don't get as good of a. They know where you are. They got a good, you know. They still basically they can still miss. Actually, no, they're still the damage is reduced even if you're cloaked and you're tractored in under SFB. But obviously in Star Armada you can't. You know, if you're tractored, tough buddy, you can't cloak. And I'm sure that whether it's friendly or not friendly tractoring. Okay. Well, I think we'll wrap up this discussion for this evening. At the moment, I think that's the end of the Star Armada series. I will double check later on this week to make sure that I have not missed anything and that there's no need for a part four. If there is, or if Chris points out, hey, you forgot this or forgot this, in which case there might be a part four in the future. But anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.